it was on this day, so many thousands of years ago, that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, spoke this knowledge to his Nitya Parikar, Arjuna. So we are fortunate to be absorbed in this holy conversation on this auspicious day. So on the last section of the 14th chapter called Guna Traya Vibhag Yoga, discriminating between three modes of material nature. And we have the two last but very potent and concluding verses of this chapter. Arjuna had asked three questions. What are the symptoms of someone who has transcended the modes? What is his behavior, which is visible by others, visible to others? And then the last is, how does he actually transcend the modes? So now Krishna is answering the third question in text 26. And he could have ended the chapter on text 26, but he decided to add one more verse, which answers a lot of different questions which might have come up in the mind of Arjuna or in other people's minds. Just to clarify things. All right, so we'll chant. Mam chayo vyabhacharena bhakti yogena sevate sa gunan samatityaitan brahma bhuyaya kalpate. One who engages in full devotional service, unfailing in all circumstances, at once transcends the modes of material nature and thus comes to the level of Brahman. So, mam means to me. Cha is usually an insignificant word which they just stick in to fill in the meter or just, you know, in a list of names, Arjuna and Yudhisthira and Bhima. And cha. You know, they put chas in between. But here, the word cha has this very deep significance that everyone agrees upon. Sripad Sridhar Swami, the original commentator of the Bhagavatam, has commented on this verse also. And he says that this word cha indicates a conclusion. It's spoken to indicate a conclusion. And that is that the determination to perform only devotional service. And Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says that it means me alone. Mam cha. Kind of like mam eva. And he also quoted, comparing this verse to the verse 7:14, Mam eva ye prapadyante, mayam etam tarantite. So he said in that verse, the word eva indicates that Brahma cannot be experienced except through bhakti. And he quoted that in his commentary. Brahma cannot be experienced but through devotional service, bhakti yoga, ananya bhakti. So he's saying, me alone. So it's kind of like eva. Eva means certainly or only, like that. It has different connotations. And Baladeva Vidyabhushan says, cha means the only way. So here we have another only way shloka. And maybe even more important than the previous verse, in the 11th chapter, at the end of the 11th chapter, Bhaktyat Pananyaya Shakya Aham Evam Vedorjuna. In that verse, the word two had a very, deep meaning and extracurricular significance, we could say, Because two also is just a small word which means a but. But in that verse, it has a deep significance, and Prabhupada mentions that also in his commentary. So that was like bhaktiya tvananyaya. But only bhakti can, you know, ananya bhakti can bring about this gyatum drashtum chatatvena praveshtum cha. See? Knowing, seeing, and entering into the Lord and His glories. And one can do that only through bhakti. So here, this verse also, maybe even more so, in one sense, because here there's a very scientific and explanation of the different processes. Krishna is talking about transcending the modes of nature, and here he says Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate comes to the Brahma Bhuta platform above the modes of nature. So, and I mean, even in the Gana section, right, Krishna's telling that the only way that one, a karmi yogi, he can only become successful if he does a little bhakti in his practice. And the Gana yogi also. And the Ashtanga yogi also. So, when one's doing nishkam karma, he comes through the jnana stage, and then he starts practicing jnana yoga. So then he has to give up his nishkam karma at that time. And then when he perfects his jnana, then he has to, at the end, give up his jnana yoga, because it's in the mode of goodness. So in order for him to come above the modes, he has to renounce even that state. And that's also mentioned by the Lord to Uddhava in the Uddhava Gita. And that is chapter 19, text 1. There the Lord says, Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, Yo Vidya Shuta Sampana Atmavan Nanu Manika Maya Matram Idam Gyatva Gyanam Cha Mai Sanyaset. Right? Gyanam Cha Mai Sanyaset. One must Sanyaset, renounce his Gyana. This is the translation the Supreme Lord said. A self-realized person who has cultivated scriptural knowledge up to the point of enlightenment and who is free from impersonal speculation, understanding the material universe to be simply illusion, should surrender unto me both that knowledge and the means by which he achieved it. So the Jnana Yogi has to actually give up Jnana and Jnana Yoga. Jnanam cha mai sanyaset. Should we bother to look at, anyway, the parts of the commentary? He says that Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur quotes comments on this Bhagavatam verse. And he says that a man may be haunted by a ghost or a snake or a tiger, as long as the man is possessed and thinks, I am a snake, I am a tiger. So some attempts will be made to counteract the ghostly influence by the application of jewels, mantras, and herbs. Or herbs, depending on what country you're in. But when the man is freed from possession by ghosts, he again thinks, I'm Mr. So-and-so, the son of Mr. So-and-so. And he returns to his original nature. At that time, the jewels, mantras, and herbs have no further immediate application. You don't need them anymore. So he tossed them away. So the word vidya in this verse indicates knowledge acquired through philosophical analysis, mystic yoga, austerities, and renunciation. Such knowledge of the temporary illusory nature of the world counteracts ignorance. That's good. And there are many Vedic scriptures that train the jiva in such knowledge. Gradually one gives up his false identification with the body and mind and with those material objects that interact with the body and mind. Having realized such counteractive knowledge, one must engage in the loving service of the Lord and become a pure devotee. When one is completely perfect in Krishna consciousness, there is naturally little interest in the innumerable details of illusion, and gradually one is transferred to the spiritual world. So anyway, I was hoping that it would come to the conclusion, but actually in the beginning of the commentary it's mentioned that the word vidya, shuddha sampanna, means that one should cultivate Vedic knowledge for the purpose of enlightenment, not for a show of mysticism, intellectuality, or impersonal speculation. Having neutralized the illusory effect of Maya, one should then transfer one's attention to the Supreme Lord, surrendering the process of philosophical negation to the Lord himself. Jiva Goswami gives example that when there's danger, a king may issue weapons to private citizens, but after military victory, the individual citizens return the weapons to the king. So there you have two examples given by our, probably you could say, most scholarly, you know, acharyas, about giving up knowledge. So anyway, the point is being made there that one must renounce one's karma yoga at a certain point of development, and then the jnani must also give up his jnana and his jnana yoga when he attains perfection. But nowhere, in any scripture, anywhere, as it said that one should give up one's bhakti. That's the point. And Prabhupada mentions this in his commentary, I believe, somewhere. Maybe, well, we'll read that. I think it's mentioned there somewhere. Or maybe in the next verse. So it's also mentioned in the Bhagavatam, and it's quoted by our acharyas, this ekaya bhaktyaham ekaya graya. Famous verse from the Bhagavatam. He says, very clearly stated there, that one can attain me only by bhakti. So that confirms this statement, bhaktyaham ekaya graya. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments in here in this verse, the Gita verse, only those who render service to me, Shyamasundar, become Brahma Bhuyai, or qualified to experience my spiritual nature. And he says, this is proved by the Bhaktyaham Ekaya Graya. Ekaya. This is only by this one method of bhakti, nothing else. Bhakti yogena sevate. So the word, this here, yo, comes from this yaha, and it's just transformed to fit the sentence. So anyone who, this is the first half of the verse, anyone who serves me, sevate mam. Right? Every sentence has a subject, an object, and a verb. So the subject is yaha, the person, anyone, yaha. Sevate, serves. Who? Mam. And here, cha means like eva, like only me. And how? Bhakti yogena. In the tritiya case, through bhakti yoga. And the word avyabhichara is also put in the tritiya, which means it's connected with bhakti yogena. So it means it's modifying the word bhakti yoga. So avyabhichara means no tendency to serve anyone other than Krishna. It means no other deity. And there's no mix of karma gyan or even nishkam karma yoga. That's the meaning. It's the same as ananya bhakti, shuddha bhakti, keval bhakti, eka bhakti, para bhakti, all of these words. They indicate the same thing. Did I leave out any? Shuddha bhakti. Right? Huh? I said keval bhakti, didn't I? All of these words indicate this exclusive, pure, unalloyed in devotional service. Because devotional service is very powerful, and In the Bhagavatam 2.7.3, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives this example. He says, if one has a strong digestive power, after eating, he automatically creates fire within the stomach. He doesn't need to take medicine to aid digestion, like some churna, right? So similarly, the fire of bhakti is so strong that a devotee need not act separately to attain jnana and vairagya. Everything is there in bhakti. It's that is the whole pinnacle or the conclusion of the yoga system. And it includes, bhakti yoga includes all of the other components of the other yoga systems, as we have shown. So Prabhupada said, this verse is in reply to Arjuna's third question, what is the means of attaining the transcendental position? And as explained before, the material world is acting on the spell of the modes of nature. One should not be disturbed by the activities of the modes of nature. Instead of putting his consciousness into such activities, he may transfer his consciousness to Krishna activities. Krishna activities are known as bhakti yoga, always acting for Krishna. This includes not only Krishna, but different plenary expansions like Ram and Narayan. Just like the famous verse by Rupa Goswami, Anukulyena Krishnanu Shilana Bhakti Rutama. So here Krishna includes other incarnations and avatars and the Lord's representatives as pure devotees. He has innumerable expansions. One who is engaged in the service of any of the forms of Krishna or of his plenary expansions is considered to be transcendentally situated. All the forms of Krishna are transcendental. So, if one engages in the service of Krishna or his plenary expansions with unfailing determination, although these modes of nature are very difficult to overcome, one can overcome them easily. This has already been explained in the seventh chapter. One who surrenders unto Krishna at once surmounts the influence of the modes of material nature. So, if someone serves Krishna with Shuddha Bhakti, or Ananya Bhakti, then Sagunan Samatit Yaitan, he transcends the modes of nature and he attains the Brahmabhuya platform. Right, he enters or he becomes Brahma. Right? So Prabhupada slams this impersonal idea that might be derived from this verse. Because anytime the word Brahma comes, the Brahmavadis, you know, jump up and down and say, point their finger. Yeah, see, this is our praman. So, Prabhupada writes that the Lord says his nature is eternal, blissful, and full of knowledge. And the living entities are part and parcel of the Supreme, as gold particles are part of a gold mine. Thus, the living entity in his spiritual position is good as gold, as good as Krishna in quality. The difference of individuality continues. Otherwise, there would be no question of bhakti yoga. Bhakti yoga means that the Lord is there, the devotee is there, and the activity of exchange of love between the Lord and the devotee is there. Therefore, the individuality of the two persons is present in the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the individual person. Otherwise, there would be no meaning to bhakti yoga. If one is not situated in the same transcendental position with the Lord, one cannot serve the Lord. To be a personal assistant to a king, one must acquire the qualifications. Thus, the qualification is to become Brahman, or free from all material contamination. So actually, that is when actual bhakti begins, at the point of Brahma-bhuta, when you're above the modes of nature. So, in order to serve the Lord, we have to become totally free from all of the anarthas. And actually, all of the anarthas come from the three modes of material nature. So gradually, as the devotee advances, he becomes more and more free from the modes, more and more free from anarthas. And then his perception of the Lord increases to the point where he can directly see the Lord. And his body becomes spiritual, including his subtle body. And all of those things begin from the practice from the very beginning of his sadhana practice of bhajan kriya. Immediately the modes of nature and the anarthas are starting to be diminished, and the material contamination of the senses are being destroyed. And factually what happens is the subtle body is being evaporated and it's being replaced with the spiritual ego and intelligence and mind, proportionately and very subtly, so subtly that nobody can see it. And even the devotee himself doesn't actually understand what's happening. But this happens, it begins right from when the devotee actually surrenders to the Lord, Sharanagata Bhakta, when he surrenders to the Lord, then at that time, the Lord begins to, transform his senses and manifest his spiritual senses, his spiritual body. So in verse 2, Baladeva Vidyabhushan had mentioned in his commentary that only by the worshipping the Guru that one can get this knowledge, right? Why is that? Because by serving the Guru, it actually breaks or destroys the glue which binds you to the material world. And that is that, that I am a Purusha. I am an enjoyer. But when you're serving a spiritual master, it becomes very clear that you're not the Purusha, you're a menial servant. So by doing that, this breaks this Purusha Abhiman, this mentality of enjoying. And then that frees one from this bhunkte prakriti jangunan. And you don't no longer want to enjoy because you don't think that you're the enjoyer. And then karanam gunasangasya, the gunasanga is broken, and then you're actually free from the material energy. So you can look at it, the process is very practical. You can see the mechanics or the philosophy behind Guru Seva. So the devotees that are fixed on the instructions of their spiritual master, they don't have to become attracted by the allurements of the modes of nature. And it's their attitude of devotion and devotional service which carries him to the state of perfection. Not just discrimination between the modes of nature. That's not enough. Because it has to be bhakti. This verse is saying here right now, that only through bhakti. Now in chapter 13 it said that one understands this, then he can, attain liberation. Of course there's different types of liberation. But Muktir hitvanyata rupam swarupena vivastiti. Actually, when the person gives up all of his upadis, designations in this world, his idea of what his rupa is, and swarupena, his real form, he's established in his, bhajan, his bhavan, to his mood of love for Krishna. So, although this knowledge is certainly liberating, and it helps one to come to this level. But ultimately, the bhakti has to be there, and that includes surrender. And the process of bhakti cannot begin without surrender. And the seva to the guru is the very practical way that we can begin to surrender to the Lord. So, Krishna said in the beginning of this chapter, this is Param Bhuya Pravakshami, and that I'm going to tell you some better knowledge. Right? So this is why this is better. Another reason is because he's describing Bhakti Yoga here, that this is the catch point, the crux of the matter. There has to be bhakti there. And Baladeva Vidyabhushan makes this point in his commentary that one must discriminate and serve me. Discrimination alone won't make one perfect. There has to be bhakti yoga. There has to be service and surrender. And he kind of discusses that somewhat. That's in verse 27, I believe, he makes this comment. Okay, number 27. Now, there could be quite a number of questions at this point. One is that, you know, you're saying that your devotees who are serving you, that they attain the Brahman platform. Why is that? You know, why will devotees attain Brahman? If the devotees are offering personal service to Shyamasundara, then why would they attain Nirgun Brahman? Right? And another question is that this Brahman platform is obtained through discrimination between matter and spirit, that this is the platform of liberation. But what is the support of the living entity who is beyond the support of Maya? But beyond the support of matter and is on the Brahman platform. Because Krishna said, Mayatatam idam sarvam, and so many things, everything rests in me. Right? So if somebody, you know, comes to the Brahman platform, what is the... is he independent? He's not resting in, you know, support, being supported by you? Like this? That's another question. So this next verse answers this and other questions. Like, you know, what is this Brahma platform? So let's chant this verse. Brahmano hi pratishtaham amritasya vyayasya cha shashvatasya cha dharmasya sukasya kantikasya cha. And I am the basis of the impersonal Brahman, which is immortal, imperishable, and eternal, and is the constitutional position of ultimate happiness. So, most of the words in this verse are in the sixth case, the genitive case. So Brahmana, of the impersonal Brahmajyoti, he pratishtaham, I am the pratishta, or the basis. And he means definitely, certainly, without a doubt. So since Krishna says, I am the pratishta, we should understand fully what this word means. As a verb, it means to stand, to stay, to dwell, to be based on or rest on, to be established, to depend on or rely on, to spread or extend over, to fix, to found, to prop, to support or maintain. And as a noun, it means standpoint, resting place, ground, base, foundation. You have your base right here, right? And you have six bases, right? Base, foundation, prop, stay, support. And it also means setting up as of a murti, establishing a murti, like you do a pran pratishta, right? An establishment on or accession to, such as the throne. Like to establish someone as the king. Like this. And there was more. I just took a few of them. There was more in the Monier Williams dictionary. So it's very clear what it means. Right? This is, I am the support, I am the rest, I am the basis, I am the foundation, I am the, I don't know, standpoint of the Brahman. Now, because the rest of the words are also in this genitive case, then they can be used as an adjective to modify Brahman, or they can be also seen that Krishna is the base, the basis of Amrita, or Avyaya, or Shashvata, or Dharma, or Sukhaisya Kantika. That Krishna, in other words, you can translate this verse that I am the basis of the impersonal Brahman, and I am the basis of immortality, imperishability, and eternality, and I am the basis of ultimate happiness. Like this. So that's another way to look at the verse. In the Nirukti dictionary, Pratishtha means that which establishes. So, I mean, some Vaishnavas may feel that this verse should be translated differently than what is given here. Because Krishna is the basis of the Brahman, of Amrita. And it says in Vishnu's commentary, what kind of Amrita are you talking about here? You may be Svarga? And it says, no, it's Avyayasya, imperishable Amrita. So, someone may think that it would be better to translate in this way, but also you can see that this the Brahman platform is also Amrita, because it's above the modes of nature. It's also indestructible. It's eternal. Right? To do it, you have to perform some bhakti, so that dharma, along with jnana or some jnana or ashtanga yoga. And it's the highest happiness compared to material happiness. Because as we said, there's manushyananda, Karma Devananda, Devananda, Indra Devananda, Brihaspati Ananda. Right? There's all these kinds of Ananda. And then higher than that is Brahmananda. So, and that is like thousands of times higher than Brihaspati Ananda. So that Ananda is, you know, Sukhaisya Kantikasya. And it's the ultimate compared to anything in this world. But it's compared only to a drop of Bhakti Ananda, right? But it has the same quality. That's the see, because the drop is qualitatively the same as the ocean. The drop of ocean water has the same quality. But you can't swim in a drop, right? You can swim in the ocean. So Bhakti is the ocean of devotion. And the drop is, you know, of the same quality, because it's Shashvata, it's Amrita, there's no pangs of material nature, there's no birth, old age, and disease, and so forth. So, and the happiness is much higher than anything in this world. So therefore, the verse can be seen in both ways, that it can be translated. All of these words can be seen as adjectives for the word Brahman. They're modifying the word Brahman. This is some Sanskrit class for you also, huh? Is that too much? You can't grasp this idea? No? Huh? No? All of the words are in this. What do you say for after Panchami comes? Shasti. Okay, Shasti. So this is the genitive case. right? Of the, right? Genitive means like a father, right? The parent. So, I am the basis of Brahman, of Amrita, of eternality, of Dharma, Dharmasya. Right? You have Dharmaha, Dharman, and Dharmena, right? Dharmaya, Dharmat, and Dharmasya. Right? So Dharmasya means of, right? So I am the basis of Dharma. I am the basis of happiness. So Pratishtaham could be used separately to all of those. Or you can say, I'm the basis of Brahman, which is eternal, which is Amrita, which is the ultimate religious experience. Okay, so anyway, you can ask me about that again later if you didn't catch it. So it's not so important. It's a way to analyze the verses. Actually, all the verses can be analyzed with grammar and, but then it takes a long time. Sridhar Swami says, Krishna is the concentrated form of Brahman. Just as the sun is an intensified form of light, of sunlight. Although Krishna and Brahman are non-different, Krishna is the support of Brahman. The completeness of Brahman is Krishna. Krishna is the concentrated form of Brahman. Right? And he explains that, in the sun there is light. And outside of the sun, that light extends. So it's the same light. But still we say, this is the light of the sun. Of the sun. We don't say, this is the sun. Like the sun shining on Radhisham.
Radhisham.
Radhisham, right? There's sun shining there. We don't say the sun is, the sun is coming in the room. But we say that this, the light of the sun is coming here. So we make some differentiation. So similarly, Brahman is not different from Krishna, but still we make some differentiation. Because if the sun is in the room, we'll all burn. Well, if the sunlight, that's nice, if there's not too much. Gives some enlightenment. Right? So Krishna says, I am also the support of eternal religion in both sadhana and siddha stages. This is from Vishnu Chakravarti, paraphrase. What is that eternal religion? That is bhakti. All the other religious principles and practices are rejected at the time of liberation, Garmagyan and Ashtanga. But bhakti is the eternal religious duty. The eternal happiness, which is the fruit of bhakti, prema, is also supported by me. This is his definition of the word dharma. It means prema. Therefore, everything is under my control. But those who worship me with desire to merge in me will also attain Brahman by my mercy. Because everything is dependent on me, if one worships me with desire for merging, he will merge into Brahman and attain the nature of Brahman. So Krishna allows that if the living entity wants that. Right? Come on, merge into me. Krishna, he allows them, Prabhupada spoke in such a way. And it's mentioned, someone quoted from Rupa Goswami in their commentary. I can't remember. But Rupa Goswami says, to merge in the body of Krishna is more offensive than merging into the Brahmajyoti. If someone wants to merge into the body of Krishna, it's even more offensive. Because the Brahmavadis, they're just not interested in serving Krishna. But to try to want to merge into Krishna, this is more sick, kind of twisted mentality. Because that means they know about Krishna, but they definitely don't want to serve him. They just kind of want to use him and merge into him. like this. But if somebody doesn't even know about you, okay, let them do whatever they want. But if they know you and you have a relationship and then they want to come and steal your money, that's worse than if they don't even know you. Something like this. So let's read what Prabhupada's last paragraph we will read here. The living entity, although Brahman by nature, has the desire to lord it over the material world, and due to this he falls down. In his constitutional position, a living entity is above the three modes of material nature, but association with material nature entangles him in the different modes of nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance. Due to the association of these modes, his desire to dominate the material world is there. By engagement in devotional service in full Krishna consciousness, he is immediately situated in the transcendental position, and his unlawful desire to control material nature is removed. Therefore, the process of devotional service, beginning with hearing, chanting, remembering, the prescribed nine methods for realizing devotional service should be practiced in the association of devotees. Gradually, by such association, by the influence of the spiritual master, one's material desire to dominate is removed, and one becomes firmly fixed in the Lord's transcendental loving service. This method is prescribed from the 22nd to the last verse of this chapter. Devotional service to the Lord is very simple, and one should always engage in the service of the Lord, should eat the remnants of foodstuffs offered to the deity, smell the flowers offered to the lotus feet of the Lord, see the places where the Lord has his transcendental pastimes, read of the different activities of the Lord, his reciprocation of love with his devotees, chant always the transcendental vibration, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And observe the fasting days, commemorating the Lord's appearances and disappearances of the Lord and his devotees. By following such a process, one becomes completely detached from all material activities. One who can thus situate himself in the Brahma Jyoti, or the different varieties of the Brahman conception, is equal to the Supreme Personality of Godhead in quality. So Prabhupada, he summarizes the whole chapter and brings the reader to the point of some practical advice. It tells him exactly what to do and an outline of the practice of devotional service. And this is the conclusion. The Acharyas have also given some conclusion. Baladeva Vidyabhushan says that associating with the modes of nature means being in the material world. And being freed from the modes of material nature means being liberated. Being freed from the modes is done by devotional service. This is the essence of chapter 14. You couldn't make it more simple than that, I think, right? Associating guna sangha means that you're bound. You're in the material world. And freedom from the gunas means you're liberated. And the way to get free is to do bhakti. Ananya bhakti. This is the essence of chapter 14. Now Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, these three gunas alone create all the anarthas which are obstacles on the path of perfection. This perfection for the jiva is ananya bhakti, which he can only achieve when he is free from the three gunas. This has been explained in this chapter 14. So it's a very strict definition of ananya bhakti. You have to be completely free from the modes of nature. So knowing oneself to be Brahman is the foundation of all realization, of all spiritual realization. Let's say, I wrote that knowing oneself to be Brahman is the foundational realization for all spiritual knowledge. But engaging in devotional service by engaging in devotional service, one further realizes that Krishna is the source of Brahman, and he is full of six opulences. So the Brahman realization is just the beginning, and then later one realizes more and more and more about the Lord. In the beginning of this chapter, Prabhupada said that by the process of philosophical speculation, we can try to understand this chapter. So when you apply your intelligence to try to see the modes of nature in this world, then you see that they're everywhere, and they're affecting everyone at all times, and it's very difficult, mama maya duratyaya, to overcome these modes. But that the super soul is not affected, or the Lord is not affected by these modes. So then if you realize how he must be so powerful, right? He's controlling the modes, which are so powerful, but he's above the modes, and he's controlling the modes. And plus if you're free from envy, then you can begin to appreciate his position as so much superior, that we're small and he is great. And then the desire to associate with him and serve him will come. Because by serving him, there's an exchange of opulences. We come close to someone, then we become like that person. Even Haranyakashipu knew this principle. In Hari Bhakti Sudodaya, he quotes that, he mentions this principle of association, that it's like a crystal or mirror, that it reflects that which is close to. So by associating with Krishna, then we get these opulences that, you know, being above the modes of nature. Like, and Prabhupada says, just like to serve the king, one has to have the qualification. So to serve Krishna, to really serve Krishna, that means we have to be on the same qualitative level as Krishna. Otherwise we can't mix with him, we can't actually serve him. So we have to come above all of the modes of nature, and that's when bhakti is really kicks in. That's, you know, because that's bhava bhakti, but that is the beginning stages of bhava bhakti are technically still called sadhana. That's like Jad Bharat, you know, he fell down, but he was at, well, Bharat Maharaj, he fell down, but he was at bhava bhakti, but he was in the, just at the cusp of bhava. He hadn't attained the higher levels of bhava. So in the beginning stages of bhava, if you study deeply like commentaries of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu by Vishwanath Chakravarti and Jiva Goswami, then they mention this point. The first initial stage of bhava is still technically called sadhana. So at that point, the jiva may somehow, very rarely, he may fall down from his position. But gradually, you know, my point is that if we're not envious, and we realize the Lord's so powerful by associating with him, we come to that level. And he gradually is working on us, transforming our senses, bringing out our spiritual body internally from the very day that we surrender and begin to serve him. And it's just happening without our knowing. Just like a child grows up, he doesn't notice, you know, that he's an inch higher than he was a year before. But when his relatives come, you know, after a year or two, they say, "Oh, he's so big now." And then he thinks, "Oh, what are you talking about? I'm the same." "Oh, you're much bigger." He can't perceive that subjectively. So through the years, actually, the devotee is becoming transcendental to the modes of nature, to lust, anger, and greed, and he's becoming free from these things. So now we will take some questions from our learned assembly. Of course, you probably have understood all the subjects, so probably don't have any questions at all. Well, we are in the Jnana section, but it is clear that, you know, when you're above the modes of nature, you come to the Brahma, you know, Brahma-Bhuta platform. a spiritual platform. I mean, I guess he could have used some other word to describe it, but at least he didn't use nirvana, you know, which means literally to blow out, you know, to snuff something out completely. Huh? Yeah, it's in the Gita, in the fifth chapter, I think. Sixth chapter? Yeah. That's part of it. But the other thing is that it's true, because Brahma, you know, everybody wants to get liberation above the modes of nature. The Nishkam Karma Yogis want it, the Jnana Yogis want it, the Ashtanga Yogis want it, Tapasvis want it. And that's what they're all trying to get. So if they can get it from serving Krishna, then maybe they'll start serving Krishna, if it's so easy, right? Of course, then that would be Gyan Mishra Bhakti, but at least that's, you know, something. That's a beginning. Bhakti is above the three modes. No, there's no modes. It means that there's some aversion. Of course, it would be better if I looked in, you know, what the other acharyas are saying, but as I understand it, means aversion to Krishna. So that's impure. Because anadrata yusmarangraya, they don't have any respect for the lotus feet of the Lord. So that is, you know, that's not pure mentality. What does it mean? I don't know. It's a mystery to me also. But the soul, because we're part and parcel of Krishna, so we could go in Krishna.
Who practices this?
Huh?
Who practices the Brahma?
I don't know if that actually can happen, but all I heard it was that it's more offensive. I don't know if it can actually happen, and I don't know if, you know, who's trying to get that. But it's... Huh? Shishupala was not hoping for that. He just wanted to kill Krishna. And actually, at the very last second, Shishupala surrendered to Krishna. Just as the chakra was at his throat, he said, "I surrender." And that was too late, you know. Yeah. He realized that Krishna is the Supreme Lord at that last second. Yeah, as described, commentator said. In the last second, just like Kaliya also surrendered after getting beat by Krishna, his features started to change and he became a devotee. And then his wife started to offer these prayers. Otherwise they would have let him get killed. But because he became a Vaishnava, then they started praying. You know. Anyway, Shishupal, yeah, he merged into Krishna's body, but then later he was reestablished in his post at the gates of Vaikuntha. But you can take it apparently, yeah, that's the kind of person that merges into Krishna's body. Someone who wants to kill Krishna, huh? Agasura. They're trying to kill Krishna. Well, each Sanskrit word, I only read maybe 25-30% of the meanings of this pratishta, and already you were, you know, you couldn't keep up, right? Writing them all down. So I'm sure if I looked at avyabhichar, and she can, Bhakti Leo, where is he? Anyway, you can bring my computer in the bag and the cord. Well, actually, we don't need the cord, but bring it, put it in the bag, and then bring it, and then I'll look. But I'm sure there's a lot of different meanings of this kiss. Avya bichara bhakti. Undeviating, unfailing, But, you know, the commentators have, like, Vishwanath Chakravarti says, no mix of karma gyan and bhakti, even nishkam karma yoga. So that is more than a dictionary definition, is when you have an acharya explain that in this context, this is what Krishna means to say. What is the real bottom line? But we also know that, you know, that bhakti has to be like that. Ahaituki apratihata yayatma supersiddhiti. Then the soul becomes very happy when he does bhakti when he serves the Lord in such a way. Without any motive and without any stopping. No vacations, you know, just... That's dharma, because that's the dharma of the soul. It doesn't stop. It's not just some, you know, you do some puja or you do some ritual or you do some yoga and then you get the result and you stop. So bhakti is not like that. It's like eating, you know, or breathing. You don't stop breathing, right? So this kind of, you know, prema dharma has to be like something you're breathing and living and it doesn't stop. It's part of you. So I think that the meanings are, you know, parallel. You can see it like that too. You had another question? Yes? Uh-huh. Which part?
Last section which you read, last paragraph.
Last paragraph, okay.
For the desire to Lord to overcome.
That's the old catch 22. Yeah, all right. Well, there's some... Then we get to the $64,000 question about the the fall of the jiva. But in many places, it's clear that there's some desire. Because Prabhupada said that even in Vaikuntha, there's this desire to enjoy. So someone may just even think that, why is everyone serving the Lord in such a way? Or just some slight thought or feeling may come. So the person, the jiva comes, there's some attraction, you know, to material energy. You can see it from Nitya Lila, or you can see it from the Tathashta region. Because, I mean, Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes that the jiva, he emanates from three points. That those Nitya Siddha Parikars in Goloka, they emanate from Baladev. And the Nitya Siddha Nitya Siddha Jivas in Vaikuntha, they emanate from Sankarshan. And the Tathasta Jivas, they emanate from Mahavishnu. So Mahavishnu is at the Tathasta region. So it describes that he comes out, when the living entity comes out, then he looks up and then he looks down. And there's some propensity or proclivity. He gravitates towards one or the other side. He sees Maya Shakti, and if he feels a little attracted, you know, to enjoy Maya Shakti, then he kind of gravitates that way. This is one description, at least by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And as far as I haven't seen anything more detailed than that. But, I mean, you can say that the point of emanation may not be the ultimate origin. Because you may, you know, emanate from a bus in Pune, but you may be from, you know, Bangalore originally. Or you could also say that you may emanate from, how can I say? That was a different idea. You take birth from your father, but now you're living with your mother in a different place. But doesn't mean that you don't have a relationship with your father. In this way, it's hard for us to actually grasp different concepts because, you know, we're in the material realm and our intelligence is limited and it's affected by the modes of nature. And in any case, even if we're so pure, we can't fully understand the situation just with logic and reasoning. But we know that, anyway, Mahavishnu, he also has a loka, and there's also servants there, right? And Krishna goes there with Arjuna, and he sees Mahavishnu, there's a location there. I mean, Mahadev also has a place, you know, Mahakaladam, and he also has eternal servants, and they're serving him also there. That's Sadashiva. So, there's many locations in the spiritual realm. But in any case, when the living entity somehow or other becomes attracted, then he comes to this world. When he has some other desires other than just serving Krishna. Yeah, of course, yeah. And once you come here, then you're affected by the modes. The modes are just facilitating our, you know, we had some slight independent mood somehow. Some slight attraction or like this. And it's also described in some places, well, Prabhupada mentions that our first birth is as Brahma. So it's a very elevated, pure existence, which is not much different from our other position. But now we have like a body made of intelligence. So now we have a material body, and we're in the material realm, and we have some desire to control and create and like this. But anyway, that's a great mystery. How the living entity comes, but yeah. Anyway, due to some desire, like this, some independent desire, he comes. Another catch 22. Well, let's wait till we get to that verse. Okay, that's in the 18th chapter. Better, because there's. I'm sure there's a lot of, clarification in the commentaries, and better let us wait till we come to that point. And anyway, that verse is describing Gyanamishra Bhakti. Anything else? Yes. Sukasyai kanti kasyacha. Right. Means ultimate happiness. What, dharmasya? Well, it's a separate word. Yeah, Prabhupada brings it together. Dharma means constitutional position. But you can see the word cha is there, right? So this means these terms are separated. Shashvatasya cha, dharmasya, sukai kanti, tikasya cha. I mean, you know, Sanskrit can be interpreted in many different ways. Maybe that's just a convenient way to express it in English. So, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, so, and the other commentators have mentioned that, you know, if a person wants to merge, then he's allowed to do that. And that is what the Jnana Yogis are interested in. So, and the Brahman platform is qualitatively equal to that ocean of devotion. It's like a drop. So for them, it's the constitutional position of ultimate happiness. I sometimes wonder if Prabhupada might have, you know, reconsidered some of the English translations just for different reasons. But in any case, the purport clearly describes, you know, to the reader what is the Siddhanta. Even the verse can be, the English and the Sanskrit can both be misinterpreted. But that's why we have purports. An intelligent person will see that, all right, if Krishna is the foundation of that lofty spiritual plane, which is full of eternality and immortality, imperishability, and is the ultimate, you know, the position of ultimate happiness, and Krishna is the basis of that. And in the previous verse it says, one can get this by worshipping me. Then the person will come to Krishna. And even the Gyanis will come to Krishna. And if the person's interested in merging, then okay, he'll do Gyanamishra Bhakti. And if the person falls in love with Krishna, then he becomes a pure devotee. And then if he reads Prabhupada's commentary, then he's directed. No, I think it was just one person that mentioned that. They didn't all say that. Let me read the paraphrase of this commentary. Vishwanath Chakravarti. He says, Arjuna speaks, how will your devotees get nirgun bhakti? They are rendering service to you, so why will they attain that? Krishna answers, that Brahman, which is considered param pratishta, ashraya, the supreme shelter of the impersonalist, I am the shelter of that. Brahman is not different from me. It is one of the dependent features of myself. Is this Amrita from Swarga? No, it is Avyaya, immortal. It is the liberation and the attainment of Krishna. Or myself. Krishna says, I am also the support of eternal religion in both practice and perfect stage. And what is that eternal religion? That is bhakti. All other religious principles and practices are rejected at the time of liberation, karma, jnana, and ashtanga. But bhakti is the eternal religious duty at both sadhana and siddha stages. That is also supported by me. The eternal happiness, which is the fruit of bhakti, prema, love of God, is also supported by me. Therefore, everything is under my control. And so those who worship me with a desire to merge into me, they will also attain that Brahman by my mercy. And Sridhar Swami says, Brahmano Pratishta means that Krishna is the personified, solidified form of Brahman. And he describes about the light and the sun and this and that. That's part of Vishwanath's commentary. Anyway, I'll read it too. Just like light is all over the universe, but the sun is an intense form of the light. As sun is the source of all light, I am the source of Brahman effulgence. Just as in the sun there is light, and there is light outside of the sun, there is no difference between these two lights. Still we say, this is the light of the sun. Similarly, although Brahman and Krishna are not different, still Krishna says he is the support of Brahman, although they are non-different. As the sunlight is said to come from the sun and is dependent on it, although they are non-different. Then Baladeva Vidyabhushan, in his Gita Bhushan, writes, in this last verse, the Brahman platform, which is Krishna, is obtained by discrimination between matter and spirit. This is the platform of liberation. But what is the support of the living entity who is beyond the support of matter and is on the Brahman platform? In answer to what is the support of this Brahman platform, Krishna answers, Brahmano hi pratishtaham. He means definitely, without any doubt. Krishna is the support of Brahman platform. His state is avyaya, imperishable, and it doesn't change. So obviously his support is Krishna, who has a transcendental form and is very dear to his devotees. Pratishtha, in which one is situated. I am the supreme shelter and supreme object of love for my devotees. In this way, by devotion, the devotee experiences me. There is no coming down to the material world because I am the supreme shelter of all living entities. How does a person take shelter of Krishna when he's liberated? Is he independent? No. I am also the support of the liberated Brahman position. I am the support of the six kinds of opulences, and I am the support of the principles of religion, as well as the transcendental pleasure and vibhuti of my lila. All these also come from me. So that's how they explain. You can see this. They both explain in such a way. I am the support of this, I am support of that, of all of these words. Because they're all in this genitive case, this shasti. So that's how they present it. In the Uddhav Gita, there's also a Guna Traya Vibhag chapter. So I thought I would read a little bit of that. And then somebody can turn on my computer, and because I want to read this and have the computer, and I can look at this word avyabhichara. We'll look at that in a second. The three modes and beyond. This is chapter 25 of Canto 11. I'll read from verse 2. It's a description of the mode of goodness first. Mind and sense control, tolerance, discrimination, sticking to one's prescribed duty, truthfulness, mercy, careful study of the past and future, satisfaction in any condition, generosity, renunciation of sense gratification, faith in the spiritual master, being embarrassed at improper action, charity, simplicity, humbleness, and satisfaction within oneself are qualities of the mode of goodness. It's interesting, huh? Now, for passion, material desire, great endeavor, audacity, dissatisfaction, even in gain, false pride, praying for material advancement. That's everybody, right, in the material realm. Considering oneself different and better than others. Sense gratification. Rash eagerness to fight. A fondness for hearing oneself praised. The tendency to ridicule others. Advertising one's own prowess and justifying one's actions by one's strength are qualities of the mode of passion. I find now, to read this now is very enlightening, because we've spent 3 days talking about the modes now, right? You can see how Uddhava Gita is more developed. Ignorance. Intolerant anger. Stinginess, that means being cheap, right? Speaking without scriptural authority, violent hatred, living as a parasite, hypocrisy, chronic fatigue, that sounds like me, quarrel, lamentation, delusion, unhappiness, depression, sleeping too much, false expectations, fear, and laziness constitute the major qualities of the mode of ignorance. Now please hear about the combination of these modes. My dear Uddhav, the combination of all these modes is present in the mentality of I and mine. The ordinary transactions of this world, which are carried out through the agency of the mind, The objects of perception, the senses, and vital airs of the physical body are also based on the combination of the modes. When a person devotes himself to religiosity, economic development, and sense gratification, the faith, wealth, and sensual enjoyment obtained by his endeavors display the interaction of the three modes. When a man desires sense gratification, being attached to family life, and when he consequently becomes established in religious and occupational duties, the combination of the modes of nature is manifest. Pravritti lakshane nishta puman yarhi grihashame sadharme chano nishteta gunanam samitirhisa. Sridhar Swami comments, religious duties performed for a promotion to heaven are understood to be in passion. Those performed to perform to enjoy ordinary family life are in the mode of ignorance. And those performed selflessly to fulfill one's occupational duty in the Varnashram system are in the mode of goodness. Translation, text 9. A person exhibiting qualities of self-control is understood to be predominantly in goodness. Similarly, a passionate person is recognized by his lust, and one in ignorance is recognized by qualities such as anger. So the anger here is krodhayais tamasa yutam. Kamadi bhi rajo yuktam. Any person, whether man or woman, who worships me with loving devotion, offering his or her prescribed duties unto me without material attachment, is understood to be situated in goodness. When a person worships me by his prescribed duties with the hope of gaining material benefit, his nature should be understood to be in passion. And one who worships me with the desire to commit violence against others is in ignorance. So the worship can be in different modes too. Then he talks about the prominence of one mode over another. Just like in the Gita. Here's verse 17. You should discern the mode of passion by its symptoms, the distortion of the intelligence because of too much activity, the inability of the perceiving senses to disentangle themselves from mundane objects, an unhealthy condition of the working physical organs, and the unsteady perplexity of the mind. Ignorance. When one's higher awareness fails and finally disappears, and one is thus unable to concentrate his attention, his mind is ruined and manifests ignorance and depression. When the increase of the mode of goodness, with the increase of the mode of goodness, the strength of the demigod similarly increases. When passion increases, the demoniac becomes strong. And with the rise of ignorance, O Uddhav, the strength of the most wicked increases. More wicked than the demons. It should be understood that alert wakefulness comes from goodness, sleeping with dreaming from the mode of passion, and deep dreamless sleep from ignorance. The fourth state, Turiya, pervades these three and is transcendental. Oh, residence in the forest is in the mode of goodness. Residence in a town is in the mode of passion. Residence in a gambling house displays the quality of ignorance. And residence in the place where I reside is transcendental. Radha Kunjabihari ki. So you're living in Vaikuntha here, above the modes of nature. Yes. So now, gradually, if you stay here, you will become like Kunjabihari, above the modes of nature. And if you go away, then there's no telling what may happen to you. So be forewarned, brothers. Sado Sabdan. Thank you. Then he talks about food and all different things. It goes on and on and on. It's like the other chapters in the Gita. there's interesting verses here. So if you get a chance, you can look at this chapter 25 of the 11th canto. And there's commentaries also there. So, any other last remaining questions about the three modes of nature, about our practice, about our becoming transcendental, about our work? My understanding is that, the modes are everywhere in Prakriti. And it's not like cyclic where you can, set your watch. But, we did describe that the day, the 24 hours of the day are influenced in different ways. Because morning is goodness, and around, 11, like that, passion starts to roll in. People start to work. And people working during the day. And then in the evening they like to relax, and the mode of ignorance helps you to relax. And then when it gets heavy, at about 9 or 10, then you go to sleep. So there's a cycle in the days. Now, I don't know if there's a universal cycle that, at a certain time of the year, the demigods get nourished by sattva-gun. I never heard any description like that. But they're definitely kind of revolving, or maybe not in such a systematic way, but in the universe, but they come and go. So, ultimately, I can't really answer that because I just haven't read about any. I can see the cycle in the day. I think you can also see it. It could be true in the universe that there's some kind of cycle with the demigods. But I never heard about that, so I can't speculate. Yes, it's true. And I can't remember being in any higher planets. At least at this point. Maybe that's good. No, but it has to do with Prakriti and Jiva also. Remember we gave those three circles? So the relationship, the relationship of the Jiva with the Lord, that's more like bhakti or abhideya. To understand the tattva, we are manifestations of the Lord. Or, vibhinaṃsha, expansions. So that's sambandhagyan, But especially the jiva in Prakriti, that's sambandhagyan. And then at the end, the abhideya is bhakti, how he can get free from this. But how he's sent and how he's affected, how he's injected into the Prakriti, and how the gunas of the Prakriti, play around with him or influence him. That's all sambandhagyan. So that's a process of knowledge. As you can see, that's more detailed than any other chapter. Chapter 13 just gave sutras, right? Purusha Prakriti Stohi. But now he's describing, what happens. And what is gunasanga? The whole, this chapter is just describing this guna sangha. And that, like I said, that verse is expanded in chapter 14. Very much. How he's Prakriti Stohi, and how he's guna sangha. Right? Well, the middle section can be subdivided into three. So if you do that, then there's five sections. But better just think that there's three, and then the middle section has these subsections. It makes it easier.
1 to 9, 10 to 18, and 19 to 20.
Last is called transcending the modes.
And how he
transcends. Makes it more clear. Anything left? Anything else? Otherwise we can stop at 6 o'clock now. That's my plan, just to finish this chapter. As you can see, there's a lot of commentary and a lot of subtle points there. Oh yeah, let's look at this Avyamichar. Transcendental show. Okay, here it is. Avyabhichara, not so many. Avyabhichara means non-failure, absolute necessity, non-deviation, conjugal fidelity. Fidelity, you know what that means? Conjugal means being faithful to your spouse. Chastity, not deviating, going to another wife or woman or man. Non-transgression. Constant. That's the one Prabhupada chose there. And avyabhicharat or avyabhicharena means with absolute necessity also. There's not so many meanings here for this word, actually. I thought there would be more. But still there's five. Absolute necessity, non-failure, non-deviation, non-transgression, constant, and with absolute necessity. Of course, the dictionary is not going to say, you know, without karmagyan or ashtanga. That's the commentator's meaning, translation. Okay, Hare Krishna. Good evening to you, brothers. May you be blessed. Hare Krishna. Be happy.